You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the globe to bring you the latest developments in medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. We love the herb. It's time for the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. Now, here's your host, Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Wednesday, November 8th, 2017, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Welcome to the program. What a fine day it is today for our hump day. Also, we've got the results from election night 2017, which turned out quite well for those of us seeking reform for our marijuana laws across the country. We'll tell you all about that in the cannabis headline news. We got the rundown on votes in Virginia and New Jersey, as well as New York, Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. Also coming up on the show in What in the News, we're going to remark on statements made by a DEA spokesperson who reiterated that CBD oil is illegal, but if his kid was sick, he'd use it. He'd break federal law. A federal law enforcement officer talking about his intent to break federal law. I can't let that go without comments. We'll talk about that at length in What in the News today. And it is hump day, and today it's a hemp day hump day, because joining us on the program for the hemp day hump day update, we've got Doug Fine, the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, the New York Times bestsellers. He'll be joining us to talk about what's going on with the hemp harvests all across the country. He's been off the show for a few weeks because he's been so busy helping out with the harvest, but we'll tell you all about what's happening in Washington State, where he's been working with Native Americans from the Colville tribe and their first attempts at hemp in a state that has some very, very strange laws when it comes to hemp and marijuana. Of course, we're talking about Washington State. Also, we get an update on what's happening in Hawaii and Vermont and New Mexico from Doug Fine coming up in the middle of the show. Then at the end of the program, we'll have time for a radical rant where I want to talk a little bit more about hemp and make sure everybody understands that hemp is not illegal because marijuana is a drug. Marijuana is illegal because hemp is an oil. We'll talk all about the conspiracies that have helped keep hemp illegal and why we still have states like Washington State where it's easier to be a marijuana farmer than it is to be a hemp farmer. Seems completely backwards, but we'll talk about that coming up at the end of the show in the Radical Rant. But first, let's get to the news.
This is your cannabis headline news, brought to you by MarijuanaMoment.net, the complete source for all your marijuana news in one morning newsletter from Marijuana Majority founder Tom Angel. Subscribe today for free at MarijuanaMoment.net.
This is your cannabis headline news for Wednesday, November 8th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville. Voters in Virginia and New Jersey last night elected as governor two Democrats who promised ending arrests for marijuana. In New Jersey, Phil Murphy held off the current Republican lieutenant governor in a bid to replace term-limited governor Chris Christie. Murphy campaigned on his support for marijuana legalization, an issue on which the democratically controlled New Jersey legislature has been stymied by the notoriously pot-hating Christie. In Virginia, suburban voters in the northern part of the state carried Lieutenant Governor Ralph Northam to victory, who had made decriminalization of marijuana an issue of racial justice. Northam beat out former Republican National Chairman Ed Gillespie, who campaigned on a Trump-like platform of racial and cultural division. Northam will be aided by historic gains in the state assembly made by Democrats, who need wins in just two of four closely contested recounts to determine if they've gained majority control for the first time this century. By a margin of 4-1, New Yorkers have rejected the once every two decades chance to convene a constitutional convention, killing the only chance voters could have had to legalize marijuana. The opposition, which included pro and anti-abortion rights groups, Second Amendment advocates, and the state's conservative party, spent over $1 million running ads and distributing lawn signs suggesting that it might be dangerous to reopen the entire document at a convention that they said could be hijacked by special interests. Supporters included the Legalize New York campaign, led by investor Jerome DeWald, which had planned to lobby for a marijuana legalization constitutional amendment if the convention had been convened. Hopes for New York reform now rest with the state assembly and Governor Andrew Cuomo, who remains, quote, unconvinced of the merits of legalization and considers marijuana, quote, a gateway drug that leads to other drugs, end quote. At the municipal level, voters in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and Michigan affecting marijuana policy turned out in favor of reform. More than 3 out of 4 voters in the college town of Athens, Ohio, overwhelmingly approved a measure to completely eliminate fines and court costs for possessing and cultivating up to 200 grams of marijuana. Joining the cities of Newark, Logan, Roseville, and Bel Air, which passed similar depenalization ballot measures in the 2016 election, and Toledo, which depenalized in 2015. Under Ohio state law, minor marijuana possession offenses are classified as a minor misdemeanor, punishable by a fine, but no jail time or criminal record. In Philadelphia, the new district attorney, Lawrence Krasner, campaigned on not prosecuting marijuana offenses as a method of combating the opioid crisis. And in Wayne County, Michigan, home to Detroit, voters approved 2 ballot measures that will allow medical cannabis businesses to operate in more areas and to stay open longer. A spokesman for the DEA reiterates that cannabidiol oil is federally illegal, but when asked if he'd violate that law to help his own child, answered, quote, I'd do the same exact thing without hesitation, end quote. DEA spokesperson Rusty Payne explained in an interview with WTHR-TV Indianapolis that, quote, CBD's not legal. It's just not. Anybody who's in violation of the federal laws always runs that risk of arrest and prosecution, end quote. But Payne dismissed that possibility, saying families currently giving their children CBD oil, quote, are not a priority for us, and prosecuting them, quote, would not be an appropriate use of federal resources, end quote, adding his doubts that any U.S. attorney would bring charges in such a case. House Republicans in Maine are vowing to continue blocking regulations for a recreational marijuana industry until Democrats cave on demands to restrict the voter-approved initiative. House Minority Leader Ken Fredette said the Joint Select Committee on Marijuana Legalization Implementation must get tougher on people who drive high, such as implementing an unscientific per se DUI standard for THC. Republicans also want to crack down on what they call loopholes in the medical marijuana program and to kill a tax-sharing provision for towns that host recreational growing operations or retail stores. Until regulations are passed, it remains legal for all Maine adults to possess 2.5 ounces of marijuana, cultivate 6 mature plants, and share with other adults. This has been your Cannabis Headline News for Wednesday, November 8th, 2017. I'm Russ Belville.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda. If you appreciate my full-time dedication to reporting and analyzing the news about cannabis, consider becoming a patron of the show. For just $4.20 per month, you'll help keep my live stream and podcast free while earning yourself your own private ad-free podcast link for the show, as well as links to the supporting articles and data. For a $9.99 VIP subscription, you'll get all that plus my exclusive research, data tables, and graphics. Just log on to MJAgenda.com and click the Become a Patron button today.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
We've got to reestablish first a view that you should say no. People should say no to drug use. They got to protect themselves first.
Whatever you're smoking, it's not marijuana.
Looking for the 420 friendliest way to visit beautiful legal potland Oregon?
I'm Lori Duckworth, inviting you to come stay with us at Delta 9 House and Studios.
You get your own private room with queen bed and access to our high-speed Wi-Fi, premium entertainment system, and more.
We'll even cook you breakfast. Look us up on Facebook at Delta 9 House.
That's facebook.com/Delta9House.
Delta 9 House is booked through Airbnb.com, City of Portland, permit number 17-159855.
People should say no to drugs.
It's really, really easy.
Adding more gasoline to the fire.
Lackadaisical.
Really tough, really big, really great to infect and rot our nation's vomiting.
Dangerous and gateway drugs.
We don't need to be legalizing marijuana.
To build and grow a stronger, healthier, and drug-free society.
What in the news?
Well, today in What in the News, I want to talk about that story featuring Rusty Payne, the DEA spokesperson, who said that when it came to CBD, it's completely illegal, absolutely illegal. If you're violating federal law, you are running the chance that you could be arrested because you're breaking the law because CBD is illegal. But when asked if he would give CBD to his own child, if his child was suffering and it could help, he said, absolutely. Yes, absolutely, I would do that. No questions asked. Which is really confounding. He also went on to say how it would not be a good use of federal resources to go after a mother who is giving her child some CBD to treat that kid's seizures. It's not a priority. He went on to cite the opioid overdose epidemic as a bigger priority. Got to go after the opioids. And that it wouldn't be likely that any U.S. attorney would bring any charges in such a case. It wouldn't be likely that the DEA would be busting down doors. Now, this is a story in Indiana because they've had a couple of recent task forces that have gone and busted down doors. Well, not if they busted down doors, but they've busted these sellers of CBD oil. And so the confusion came from, in the state of Indiana, we had one law enforcement agency that was saying, well, CBD is illegal, absolutely illegal. And then you got the Indiana State Police that said, well, no, it's not. We think it's legal because it's coming from hemp. It's from the farm bill. I mean, there's as much confusion among law enforcement in Indiana as there is amongst the cannabis community. Well, Rusty Payne from the DEA was interviewed by the local TV station there in Indianapolis and said, well, no, that farm bill stuff, that's BS. He basically explained that the farm bill allows the production of industrial hemp for research purposes, and the sales and marketing of CBD is not research. Now, that's also more confusion, right? Because that's introducing into this element of doubt that, is marketing and sales part of research, which a lot of hemp advocates would say yes. Here in the state of Oregon, in the state of Colorado, they've been growing plots of hemp that have been established for research, but how to market is part of their research. We've talked to Doug Fine about this on previous episodes of the Hemp Day Hump Day Update. So Rusty Payne's excuse there that the farm bill doesn't matter because selling CBD isn't research, well, that's shaky ground in and of itself. It's not, by the way, the justification that the DEA gives. The DEA doesn't even refer to the farm bill. The guys that are trying to say the farm bill allows CBD oil to be legal are basing it on the farm bill that says, okay, if you got a state that's legalized industrial hemp, then you can go ahead and plant your hemp crops for research purposes, as Rusty Payne was saying. And then the CBD oil sellers also look at a DEA case, Hemp Industries Association versus DEA case that went down when the DEA was trying to restrict like hemp soap and hemp lotion, you know, hemp shampoo, that kind of stuff, was trying to ban that because it had trace amounts of THC. And it's a long, convoluted case, but basically what it came down to deciding was that anything that came from hemp stalks or hemp seeds that didn't have THC in it was okay, right? That's how we're able to have hemp soaps, hemp lotions, hemp fabrics, all this kind of stuff, right? So now the CBD oil sellers are saying, aha, well, here's our magic loophole. If what comes from stalk and seed is legal, we'll just say we're getting the CBD out of stalks and seeds. Now, are they really? No. I'm sorry, folks, they're not. And this is the rationale that the DEA has brought forth before on this subject. And I don't know why Rusty Payne didn't bring this up. But the rationale for cannabidiol being illegal in all circumstances is botanical evidence showing that the amount of CBD you would get out of a hemp stalk or a hemp seed is so, so minuscule that it would be practically impossible to use it as a source for a commercially viable CBD oil. Now, the other side will say, well, you know, the CBD oil sales will say, well, no, we got it from the seeds and stems, but what they're getting is resin that is sticking to the seeds and stems, right? You know, you walk through some pot plants, you get sticky on you, right? Well, the same thing happens. The stalks and the seeds, they get sticky. But that resin, under all conditions, is illegal. Illegal marijuana under the Controlled Substances Act. So even Rusty Payne's excuse about, you know, it being research is irrelevant, because as far as the DEA is concerned, nothing that you could make legally under the Farm Bill could practically contain any CBD. In other words, the CBD that you're making or selling had to have come from a flower. That's the DEA's actual position on this. But before we go too far afield on this, let's get back to the original point. Rusty Payne of the DEA is saying CBD is absolutely illegal. He is saying that you could be prosecuted. Anybody that breaks a federal law could be prosecuted. But then says, if it were him, as a father, had a kid with epilepsy, he'd break that federal law. And he reiterates that the DEA is not considering those people a priority. They're not interested in going after cannabidiol. They really want to go after opioids. It would be a waste of federal resources, and no U.S. attorney would bring the case. Which leads us to the ultimate question. Then why is it illegal? What's the point? What is the point of keeping a law on the books that law enforcement itself intends to break? This isn't even as bad as, you know, marijuana prohibition being on the books, and yet, you know, millions of people have violated that law for over 50 years now. 80 years. No, it's not even as bad as that. Now we're talking about the cops themselves are telling us they'd break that law. If even law enforcement won't respect the law, why do we have that law? It is long past time for cannabidiol to be explicitly descheduled. Explicitly descheduled. There needs to be an amendment made to the Controlled Substances Act that makes clear in the definition of marijuana that extracts of cannabidiol, and I'd go more broadly. I would say extracts not including THC. Right? Let's not forget about CBN and CBG and CBGB and the BGs and all the other cannabinoids out there. Okay, two of those weren't cannabinoids, but you get my point. Let's not forget about them, right? Let's make it anything that doesn't have THC. In fact, why don't we just get to the point? I mean, obviously, I would prefer that marijuana is not on the Controlled Substances Act at all. But if it has to remain, the reason why the people who want it there want it to remain is because marijuana is a drug and it gets you high. So why don't we just keep the part that gets you high on the controlled substances list? And the parts that don't get you high shouldn't be scheduled at all. It's ridiculous to think of cannabidiol being a Schedule I substance far more than THC being a Schedule I substance. At least with THC, you can make the poor argument the government has some right to determine whether or not people get high. But with CBD, you're talking about something that doesn't get people high. I mean, caffeine gets you higher than CBD will. But really, folks, we know what it's about. We know what it's about. We know why that law has to exist. The same reason as why suicide is illegal. Right? You hear about that, right? Suicide's illegal. And people go, well, what a dumb law. Suicide being illegal. If someone's going to kill themselves, what are you going to do? Charge their dead body with a crime? That's stupid, right? But the reason suicide is illegal has nothing to do with the crime that the person committing suicide is committing. It has to do with the ability of law enforcement to respond to it. If suicide's illegal, someone committing suicide or about to commit suicide, you now have this exigent circumstance where law enforcement can disregard civil liberties and such, break down your door, try to save you from committing suicide because a crime is about to be committed. See? Well, similarly, CBD remains on the books, is illegal, not because law enforcement is concerned that somebody's getting hurt with CBD or a crime's being committed with CBD or there's some harm to society with CBD. No. It's so law enforcement, so there's an exigent circumstance that keeps that product from being freely distributed and sold before the pharmaceutical companies can extract it, synthesize it, isolate it, patent it, put a barcode on it, mark it up 10,000%, and get it covered by your insurance plans, and especially government insurance.
This is bullshit. It's like Cypress Hill concert in here.
If you work in the cannabis industry, consume marijuana, or just support freedom, you need to know about breaking policy news that affects you. Marijuana Moment is the daily newsletter that helps you stay on top of all the latest and most important state, federal, and international cannabis developments. Brought to you by longtime legalization activist Tom Angel, Marijuana Moment puts a concise yet comprehensive overview of cannabis news in your inbox early every weekday morning. Wake up to Marijuana Moment and rest assured you'll be ready for the cannabis news that's driving the day. Subscribe now at marijuanamoment.net.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
And yes, we will overcome addiction in America. We are going to overcome addiction in America.
Whatever you're smoking, it's not marijuana.
Hi, I'm Russ Belville. Join me as I cover the Marijuana Agenda at the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference the weekend of November 18th and 19th in beautiful Ashland, Oregon. The OMBC is Oregon's biggest and longest-running conference dedicated to the cannabis industry and marijuana activism. You'll hear an extended interview with influential state senator Floyd Prezansky, a VIP reception and keynote address from the legendary Henry Rollins, and a free after-party featuring music from Hieroglyphics and Souls of Mischief. Plus, you'll get information from 40 industry exhibitor booths and be able to question members of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission regarding cannabis issues they'll be ruling on. Visit OregonMBC.com to learn more and book your tickets now. That's OregonMBC.com for the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. We'll see you there. Now, in the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Marijuana Agenda presents this anti-drug public service announcement.
You ignore the signs, so you enable.
You don't want to alienate your child, so you enable.
But if you think they're trying drugs, you shouldn't be afraid.
You're the parent.
So you are able.
And we can help. So you are able.
Get help at drugfree.org from the Partnership for a Drug-Free America.
This has been an actual anti-drug public service announcement. To combat this and other drug war hysteria, listen to the Marijuana Agenda every weekday at 3 p.m. Pacific at live.mjagenda.com.
Hey everybody, it's Russ Belville from the Marijuana Agenda, inviting you to be like me and get your ink done at Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo, Fort Worth's most female-friendly, clean, sterile, awesome tattoo shop. Thomas and his crew are true artists who can design you a custom piece or use a design you bring in. Lucky Horseshoe also offers all styles of tattooing as well as piercings and all-around fun. In the DFW area, stop by Lucky Horseshoe Tattoo and tell them Radical Russ sent you. Trust me, it'll feel awesome.
You're listening to the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
It's like I picked the wrong week to quit smoking.
Learn more at mjagenda.com.
The International Cannabis Business Conference is headed to Hawaii. Get your tickets now for the year's best cannabis industry island retreat this December 1st through 3rd. Kauai Grand Hyatt hosts the three-day ICBC, which begins with a VIP reception featuring cannabis comedian Doug Benson. The ICBC features exhibitor booths, keynote speeches, and informative panels with industry experts and regulatory officials. Then, when it's all said and done, kick back for the incredible after-party with music by reggae legends Morgan Heritage. There's also a singles golf tournament you can play on Monday, sponsored by Leafly Endured Ventures. Log on to internationalcbc.com to get more information and buy your tickets now. Special discount hotel rates are in effect, so act fast. That's internationalcbc.com for the International Cannabis Business Conference. Aloha.
Jack Herer once said that hemp could save the planet. Today, we take a look at the non-drug use of the cannabis plant as fuel, fiber, food, and more.
Now let's restore hemp for victory in this Hemp Day Hump Day update.
Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of the Hemp Day Hump Day update. I'm Russ Belville, and joining us today, we've got the author of Hemp Bound and Too High to Fail, hemp expert extraordinaire and goat rancher beyond all compare. It's Doug Fine joining us. Hi, Doug. How you doing?
Thank you, Russ. Oh, my gosh. It's great to be here. And your introductions are the best in the business.
Well, thank you. And you are back at the ranch, I understand, in New Mexico?
Deep breath. Yeah. For a few bit of decompression between harvest and processing on a couple of hemp projects. Yes.
I know. We just got through Croptober here in Oregon. I know all throughout the country, cannabis plants, both marijuana and hemp varieties have been harvested. And I know you've been hard at work at that up here in the Pacific Northwest, if I'm not mistaken, with some of the tribes up here.
That's right. I'm proud to say that I have been the lead and continue to be the lead consultant for the Colville tribes of Eastern Washington outside of Spokane. And the tribal council just decided they believed in hemp and wanted to see. There's a long history actually in the region of hemp as there is in so many parts of the world. And folks remember it. And when the tribal council gets behind a project, it's going to happen. And so we just, after a fairly dramatic year, due to somewhat restrictive regulations in Washington, the tribe, we just got 60 acres harvested, and we're putting together, it's fun, we're putting together the packaging and labeling for a tribally branded edible hemp seed product.
And how is that working with, between the tribe and the states? I know the tribes have their own sovereignty. Is there any hang up between the Washington state regulations and what the tribes are allowed to do?
It's a fascinating area, and I continue to learn so much about it. I'm looking right now here at the cover of a book I just ordered called Documents of United States Indian Policy, because it's a must read for anybody who's doing the kind of work that I'm now doing. And but the long story short is that tribes have many different options. There's all different kinds of relationships that tribes have with states, with U.S. states and with the federal government. And different tribes have different kinds of relationships and treaties with the federal government. And so tribes are smart, and they have good attorneys often, and they'll figure out the best way to work. In the case of Colville, for quite a number of reasons, what the tribe decided to do, and I think very wisely this year, was comply with their state's federally compliant program. And it's in doing so, you're agreeing to a kind of insanity, which is basically saying we're agreeing to serf-like conditions. And this has to do with poor first-year policy in the Washington State Hemp Program, hopefully will be improved. It's really nobody's fault. Everybody did their best. But very few participants participated at all. It's way easier to grow psychoactive cannabis than hemp. The farmers are treated like serfs. They can't replant seed, which is fine if you want to obtain, copyrighted trademark seed. But there's plenty of other options in the U.S. which were not allowed for any participants in the state of Washington this year. It was not one of the best programs in the nation this year, and yet the tribe forged through and became one of just a few, I mean really two or three entities that harvested hemp legally in the state of Washington this year. And I'm really, really proud of it, because as the inevitable end game, Russ, which you and I have been now talking about here on Hemp Day Hump Day for years, as the inevitable end game comes of cannabis is just another plant, if the final product has some sort of potential psychoactivity, of course it would be regulated by a locality in some way for adult use or medicinal use. But if it doesn't have psychoactivity, it's no more the government's business how or what it's grown for or what types of varieties are grown for than it would be for tomatoes, grapes, or wheat or anything else. So I'm proud of the tribe for fighting through under extremely restrictive conditions, and it only just helps them be in a good position for continuing to heal soil and generate revenue into the future.
And as far as the purpose of the crops, you mentioned it doesn't matter as long as it's not psychoactive, but some people are now looking to hemp crops as a source of cannabidiol or CBD, which does have medical benefits for people. Is that an area the tribe is looking at, or are we talking more traditional seed, fiber, oil type production?
Russ, I hope you're sitting down and all the listeners are sitting down, because incredibly, the state of Washington, blessedly, whose blessed voters legalized ganja in, you know, the first wave, in the state of Washington this year, it was not permitted for hemp farmers to grow for flowers. You know, down the street, you want to grow ganja for flower, go for it. But for hemp, only seed applications were allowed. And it's an insane and unacceptable policy, but the tribe decided to comply with it, and we're making the best of it. We're putting together these really tasty roasted hemp seeds that I think folks are going to love.
Is the regulation set up in such a way where hemp is defined strictly as a less than 0.3% cultivar in such a way? What I'm getting at, Doug, is if you wanted to grow a bunch of hemp, could you just get a recreational marijuana license and then decide to grow some really low THC cannabis? Would it work that way, or is all less than 0.3 automatically hemp?
If you want to be part of the state's hemp program, you have to subscribe to their rules, which in addition to when I say insane, it's humanity doesn't have time for bullshit regulations. Excuse my French. And so, as you can tell, I'm not thrilled about it. And, let alone, you know, economically struggling indigenous people in our North America, in our own continent who want to generate revenue for their people, for their tribe. But as credible as it might sound, if you wanted to cultivate this year in Washington, you could only cultivate through European Union certified cultivars obtained from Canada or Europe, no domestic cultivars, despite this being not to mention more patriotic and the state's ag department existing to support farmers, but also contrary to federal law, which allows domestic cultivars. So this year, if you wanted to comply with the state program, you had to be under touched on probably the two most serious, these unbelievably restrictive conditions, no growing for flower cultivars, flower applications, and no acquiring of your own genetics that met the federal definitions of hemp. But to answer your question of could someone who wants to produce, for instance, cannabinoid product from other cannabinoids besides THC, do it under a rec permit and market it that way? Probably. And I'll tell you this, in another state in which I'm involved right now, in Hawaii, that is a mode that early farmers in their early jostling before a real policy and a real program is set up in Hawaii. That's what some farmers are doing. They're using their whatever it is, 6 or 7 medicinal allowed plants to start developing hemp cultivars so that they're prepared with domestic cultivars that they, you know, can replant and once the program proper starts up.
Wow, we are truly through the looking glass. We've got these states with medical cannabis and recreational cannabis laws that are allowing people to grow, harvest, process, and sell, possess, and use all this cannabis with all the THC in it that we could possibly want. But now that we're talking about hemp, it seems to be more restricted in some of these states. I mean, that's got to make you pull your hair out.
It's very frustrating, and you know, it's legitimate, I think, you know, to have a discussion about it. You know, I think, Russ, we probably joked about this before in Hemp Day Hump Day of how I jokingly like to always think of I occupy the reasonable middle ground here, right? Like, I can see the other fellow's point of view. And, you know, let's say you are somebody who worked hard in Finland, Canada, Europe, somewhere, Australia, to develop certain genetics that provide certain qualities, and you want to have certain rules applied if somebody buys your product. I think that's fine. I think that it's equivalent to Levi's jeans. If you buy a pair of Levi's jeans, you cannot buy those jeans, as far as I know, take them home, take the patch off that says Levi's, put your name on it, say these are my jeans, and resell them as your product. I get that. However, if you want to buy raw cotton denim material and craft jeans from your own source, as long as they meet definitions of what denim are and you can call it denim, you're allowed to create your own genes. And that's what farmers should be allowed to do with genes spelled differently, G-E-N-E-S. Kicking and screaming are the Monsanto mentalities of the world, understanding that farmers are free entrepreneurs who don't have to buy their products and don't have to follow their rules. And breeders are going to the level sum of actually manipulating state hemp programs and to only allow, and this is supporting foreign companies, to only allow their genetics. I have no problem with people who want to feel like they are getting the sort of comfort of knowing they're going to get this particular really good, let's say, fiber crop that they want to import with the permission of the breeder and not replant it, or develop a relationship with the breeder where they are allowed after, because the breeder, to their under their rights, which I agree with, should have a series of rules that have to be followed in order for someone to sort of climb that level through foundation seed and up to the different levels of seed. That's fine. However, there's tons of hemp genetics in the U.S. right now that meet federal definitions of hemp that, for instance, just to name one, my Vermont group will provide with a right of replication, no restrictions. It's yours. As long as you can crossbreed it, that's what free farming is. We're not serfs here anymore. And so we're not, free farmers are not going to play that game and we're going to keep fighting until we win. And again, it's not saying that you should not reward people who have created a great product and want certain right restrictions. It just doesn't say everybody has to buy those. That's all we're saying.
There you go. Just like you wouldn't force everyone to have to buy Levi's jeans. They should have the choice to buy whichever jeans are made by whoever makes the best jeans. That sounds like what we apply to just about everything else in capitalism. Why not farming? I'm so glad that you're on this issue and working with these farmers, both the Native American farmers and our state hemp farmers. We've talked to you about numerous states, Hawaii, Vermont. I know you've been active in Kentucky, Colorado, Oregon. Any other updates you have for us as far as their hemp harvests?
Well, just today got off a call with some folks that are involved in the development process in California. And California is so impactful because of its large population and also with its, it's often bravery in terms of forging progressive policy first, that everybody, likes to roll their eyes and say crazy Californians, and then they lead the way and people wind up following. And then there's tons of areas from education, all kinds of policy where California has been groundbreaking and the rest of the world follows. And so it's very important how California unfolds its regulations. And now, having been involved in so many other states and seen, excuse the judgmental sounding of this, but seeing right and wrong ways, not that there's one right way, but farmer supporting, entrepreneurial supporting, American farming supporting policies, and those less so, where I feel as though I have a handle on a few basic things that can be helpful to all farmers. And so in states like California and others that are coming online, Wisconsin's just about to pass their hemp bill, and it's looking like a pretty good one, it's vitally important, these issues. Domestic cultivars be allowed, cultivation for all types of all parts of the plant be allowed, farmers be allowed to apply and grow as much as they want, acquire their own genetics if they like, as long as they meet federal hemp definitions, et cetera, all these things legal under federal law, and it's just up to the states to decide. One other state, whether or not they're going to put the devil's in the details, it's how the state ag departments do their regs. And it's really all about if a governor or a ag department head loves the plan and sees the importance of it to the state's farmers. There one issue I want to tell you about one other fun state, Russell, if we have a minute, which is my own state of New Mexico, has a really fun update for you. But briefly, other than making sure that the genetics and the are a free level playing field for farmers to apply, and other than making sure they can grow for all types of the plant, the other sort of player in this is, other than genetic foreign genetic companies that are trying to keep a hold on the market for their own profit, the other issue is the love of the developing love affair amongst all the different types of the cannabis plant. Part in some of the states where there are restrictions, it has to do with perceived, as you and I, we've done whole hump day episodes just on this topic, but perceived friction amongst different parts of the plant, namely people that are cultivating cannabis for above certain thresholds of THC versus those below. And so a large part of, I think, our mission as people that care about the cannabis plan is making sure that the policy, that the mindset within the movement and within the industry is one of understanding cooperation, that there's going to be a broad range of applications from 0.000001 THC through, whatever 80s or 90s for intense cancer treatment or whatever applications may happen for those. And so all of those are just the cannabis plan. And there should be no differentiation, different hemp programs versus this program versus that. It should just be like tomatoes. Grow a tomato. It might be sun-dried. It might be a meat tomato, a soup tomato. It might be a cherry tomato. But who cares what your neighbor's growing? Grow for the application that you want to grow for. And I think we're moving that way in cannabis. Do I have time to tell you a quick anecdote about what's happening here in New Mexico?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
Here in New Mexico, last legislative session, our governor, for a short time longer, vetoed 12 bills, and two of them were hemp bills. Our legislature, bipartisan legislature, passed two hemp bills, both of which our governor vetoed. And so it turns out that she didn't follow procedure for how to veto, which is terrific for people that wanted those 12 bills to be passed. It's somewhat dysfunctional when there's that many vetoes in a state anyway. A judge and an appeals judge have now said, it was invalid. And it has to do with, legal experts could explain this better, but you're supposed to explain why you're vetoing it. She didn't. She just vetoed them. And our hemp bills are law. And the slightly better one, neither one of them are extremely robust. I and many others have been working, since I live in New Mexico for years on getting, but the broader one that's going to allow at least some private farmers to get on hand and all that, it looks like it's going to become law. And it's a beautiful thing. It's like the universe is not allowing an unreasonable veto of this important crop. So the wheels are starting to turn in New Mexico at this point between continuing legal challenges of the overall veto issue and the fact that the poor Department of Ag is a bit hamstrung. I know all these guys. I've been talking to them for years. They kind of get it about hemp, but their boss doesn't even want the bill to have been passed. And so it's like a little tricky to get the regulations going, but it's yet another victory. It looks like my home state here, the land of enchantment in New Mexico, is coming online with hemp at last.
Oh, that's really good news. One last issue I wanted to ask you about. I don't know if you've been following this one, but in the state of Missouri, there is a man who is taking a case to the Supreme Court there for his right to farm cannabis, psychoactive cannabis, because Missouri has in its constitution a right to farm amendment. Now, the opposition is saying, well, it's illegal cannabis. It's illegal cannabis. It's not really farming. This has no merit. And he has lost at the previous levels of his court challenges. But I was curious as to this right to farm amendment and knowing, where Missouri might be on hemp. Could that be used for a hemp farmer in Missouri to say he's got a right to farm hemp?
That's a great question. I didn't know about that example. And kind of a side note that's interesting about right to farm laws, not all, but in some cases, right to farm laws started to come about from big monoculture ag and chemical companies that were worried about the prospect of states banning their crops for safety reasons. And so some of the right to farm laws actually came about from big ag. So the issue with hemp at this moment, and I'm glad you brought this up because really it's a nice punctuation point, which is that I would love the radical Russ to be just regular everyday Russ and Hemp Day Hump Day to, if not be unnecessary, just talk about more in the fastest industry to cross the $1 billion domestic annual revenue mark of any, which hemp is already on the way for. It's doubled in size this year from last year, according to the last week's report from Vote Hemp. It's a gorgeous thing, 1,500 hemp farmers in the U.S. But the issue with hemp in the case of, let's say, applying that Missouri right to grow law is, in order in the current phase of things, if one wants to be in sync with federal and state law, one has to grow under a certain restrictions having to do with limited farm bill provision, namely cultivating under your state's hemp program. And so, in other words, this Missouri farmer could potentially get away with it within the state. But last year, or now getting almost 2 years ago, the Menominee Nation in Wisconsin, they were raided with their crop seized, their hemp crop seized, because Missouri itself did not have a state hemp program. Wisconsin itself did not have a state hemp program. So I hope I was making myself clear that you're actually not federally illegal right now unless you are participating in a state hemp program.
Got it. All right. Well, Doug Fine, thanks so much for joining us here for Hemp Day Hump Day Update. It's always a wealth of information you bring to the table, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Russ. Keep up the great work.
This episode was produced as part of the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, the daily news and interview podcast covering the world of medical cannabis, adult marijuana, industrial hemp, and spiritual ganja. MJAgenda.com.
The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville is brought to you by Cannabis Kamikaze, a professional licensed producer from Canada producing 3 pounds per light. Follow Cannabis Kamikaze on Twitter at Cannabis Kamikaze. That's at Cannabis, K-A-M-I-K-A-Z, Cannabis Kamikaze.
You're listening to The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Health Cannabinoid, your ACMPR experts. Consultation services for medical cannabis. Visit healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. That's www.healthcannabinoid.com or call 1-800-906-1383. Health Cannabinoid.
Total war against public enemy number one.
10 federal criminal penalties for up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
Marijuana is probably the most dangerous drug.
Legalization is just another word for surrender.
I experimented with marijuana and didn't inhale.
This is not medicine. This is a Cheech and Chong show.
Encourage people to use less drugs.
I am ill.
That was the point.
I think we'd be a mistake to legalize.
Negative reports coming out of Colorado.
Good people don't smoke marijuana.
The most confounding thing about the war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs is the federal prohibition on industrial hemp. It makes zero sense whatsoever, and the more you dig into it, the less sense it makes. I'm inspired for this rant by my interview with Doug Fine, and I've also spoken with Joy Beckerman about this, who was one of the instrumental figures in getting the law passed. But it's important to note that in Washington State, they legalized adult cannabis use and commercial cultivation. Can't cultivate your own, but there's licensed growers cultivating it for the shops. You can go buy it. And we're talking about marijuana. We're talking about THC-laden ganja, get you high cannabis. You can become a licensed grower for that and grow acres and acres of this stuff. Yeah, a lot. And that happened in 2012, but when that happened, it did not legalize industrial hemp. That's right. You could get a license to grow cannabis plants with up to 20, 30% THC in them. But if you were a farmer who planted some hemp plants with less than 0.3% THC in them, you were committing a felony and could do serious prison time. And that was, you know, Washington State finally got around to changing that law, you know, years later. And now they're just beginning their first hemp harvest. But even so, the restrictions under which our hemp farmers have to labor are astoundingly ridiculous as far as security requirements and reporting and recording and the limitations on getting seed, domestic cultivars, etc. And we are talking about a non-psychoactive crop used for food, fuel, and fiber. And now I understand that some people are looking at using cannabis crops for the production of CBD. And while I will agree that CBD isn't like THC, a massively psychoactive sort of molecule, if it is going to be used for a medicinal purpose, that does put the crop in a different level than something you'd use for food, fuel, or fiber. You know, something you're going to ingest, you know, medicinally, it might hold to a higher standard. So I could see if we were going to have some sort of, you know, regulation with respect to hemp flower, being, you know, cultivating hemp for flower. But when we're talking about farmers growing tall, reedy cannabis plants for stock, for the bast fibers to make batteries or to make canvas, cloth, plastics, whatever else you want to make, why in the world are we banning that? Well, it's a pretty simple explanation. See, the problem with the cannabis plant, from the perspective of our opponents, is that it's a weed. This is a big problem. Big, big problem. See, if you're a company that produces, say, tobacco products, yes, your average person could grow tobacco and dry it and process it and make cigarettes out of it stuff, but yeah, it's a real pain in the ass. It's just not really worth anyone's time. So there's no threat to allowing people to grow tobacco. If you're a huge agribusiness company, you know, Archer Daniels Midland or whatever, and somebody wants to grow tomatoes in their backyard, they're not really going to grow enough tomatoes to make a significant dent in your ability to sell tomatoes. But when it comes to hemp and when it comes to cannabis, marijuana, whichever cultivar you're growing in for whatever purpose, it's a weed. You can grow a whole lot of it real fast, real often. And you don't need a whole lot of it. Most people don't need a whole lot of it very often, right? So it'd be really easy to flood the market with this stuff, and it would be just damn near ubiquitous. It'd be cheap as hell. It'd be like teabag cheap, right? We're talking about a leaf crop if it were absolutely legal. And that's why it must remain prohibited, at least according to our opponents out there, the people who are making the pills, who are making the alcohol, and most importantly, making the gasoline, the oil that our economy runs on. I have a saying that I've used for years, and that's, hemp's not illegal because marijuana's a drug. Marijuana's illegal because hemp is an oil. We had to demonize the psychoactivity of marijuana to be able to make illegal hemp. Think of it. Our country has been awash in hemp since 1611, first hemp planted by colonists here in America. And throughout the 17th century, 18th century, 19th century, our country was raised on hemp and utilized hemp for sails and rigging and rope and canvas and cloth and oil. In fact, hemp oil was second only to whale oil in its use in the 19th century, as far as lamps and heating and all that kind of stuff. And when you're an oil company, you produce a product that requires massive capital investment, digging holes into the ground, pumping out crude, refining it, processing it. You can't have there be acres and acres of fields producing hemp seeds from which you can squeeze out an efficient oil that could be used in diesel engines. They saw this coming. Rudolf Diesel, the inventor of the diesel engine, specifically engineered that engine to run off of hemp seed oil. And as an engineer, you know, someone who's trying to solve problems, it makes logical sense, right? Hey, we need a fuel that can run an engine. What could be more efficient than something we could grow, something that's replenishable, something that we can recycle, something that's sustainable, something that pulls carbon dioxide out of the air to make up for the carbon dioxide we put into the air when we burn damn stuff? Carbon neutral. No, we can't have that. Not good for ExxonMobil's profits, is it? Not good for Chevron's profits. Yeah, hemp is an oil. That's the biggest problem. And once this is unleashed, I mean, the dam's about to burst. And they continue to hold us back with respect to the medical, the recreational, the psychoactive aspects of the cannabis plant. And I believe they do so in part not due to a rational fear of how bad getting high is. Yeah, so there's some Jeff Sessions types out there that it's just a Damon Wade. It's just horrible if you use it. Good people don't smoke marijuana, right? There's some of them out there. But I think for a lot of them, it's a practical issue. They've got to demonize the psychoactive side because there's nothing to demonize about the hemp side. And if people knew about hemp and there wasn't so much confusion about hemp and marijuana in the general public's mind, they'd be aghast that we're not utilizing this crop. They'd look at farmers all throughout the Midwest, some of their friends, their family, who are struggling to make ends meet, looking across, farmers in North Dakota, looking across the border at Canada, where they're making $300 an acre profit on growing hemp. Now, I'm not saying that would necessarily be the profits in America. The more we grow it, the more the whole market would be flooded, the more the prices would come down. But come on, let's give our farmers the opportunity. Let's have hemp for victory again. It's just one of the biggest tragedies of the war on drugs is this banning of industrial hemp. And again, I reiterate that they had to go after the psychoactivity of cannabis, of marijuana, in order to ban industrial hemp. Because our people knew of hemp. As we creep into the 20th century, when we started to get the Rudolph diesel engine, we got Henry Ford building cars out of hemp. We have the understanding of being able to make plastics out of hemp. And right around that time, around the early 1900s, is when they first, you know, started striking oil, Texas and Oklahoma and such, and realizing, hey, here's a new industry. As we move into the 30s and 40s, you get the development of synthetic fibers made from petroleum and such, nylon and so forth, replacing hemp rigging, replacing hemp rope. The more that industry needed to make sure that its natural, sustainable competitor was kept down. And how would you have turned to the American people in the 1920s and 30s and said, oh, we're going to have to ban all those hemp crops you've been making canvas out of, that you've been lighting your lamps with the oil, that you've been eating the hemp seeds. We've got to ban those plants because they compete with Rockefeller. They compete with Standard Oil. That wouldn't have flown. But being able to say, the Mexicans bringing their marijuana, their loco weed, drives them insane, makes them axe murderers. Oh, and by the way, we need to ban every cannabis plant, including those hemp plants. But the marijuana, oh, the Mexican murderers, oh my goodness. That's part of what we're fighting against. That's part of why we're here every day bringing you the news and the interviews and the opinion and analysis, the data, all of the information you need to fulfill the marijuana agenda, which very simply is just to be treated like a beer drinker, just to have the same rights as our friends do, who enjoy a quality wine or beer or cider, have a place to gather and enjoy it, not have to fear losing our jobs because we use it, be able to raise our kids, not have them taken away. That's all. And another part of the marijuana agenda, making full use of the hemp crop, help us combat this climate change, deal with our energy addictions, keep us from being beholden to terrorists.
Follow MJ Agenda on Facebook, Pinterest, Instagram, YouTube, and follow MJ Agenda Show on Twitter. Learn more at MJAgenda.com.
Thanks. for joining us. For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.